When I was 18, my parents took me to India for a punal, so that was my thread ceremony.
Yeah.
So that was important to my dad, so I did it for him. And I think he appreciated that. So that was the first time I'd visited as a 18, I guess. Yeah, 70, is 80, 85, 18.
Hello, and welcome to the second episode of this oral history podcast series, produced for Academy's Heritage Project and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. As part of this multi-layered project, which began in November 2020, Academy has worked with three schools across London and Cambridge to deliver a series of oral history workshops to students aged 8 to 21. In this episode, we'll showcase some clips of the oral histories gathered by students from Sanskriti School of Dance in Cambridge. Our workshops were held on Zoom, where Sanskriti students worked alongside members of Pagrav Dance Company to explore themes of migration, culture, identity, and diaspora. In our workshops, we thought carefully about individual and shared identity, what it means, and how identity is formed. In these discussions, students talked about how family history, stories, and culture all play a part in our identities. Mansi interviewed her father about their family history and found out that her grandparents' home had been burned down during conflict before her father's birth. Here, Prasad talks about the event and the lasting effects it's had on their family.
Nathuram Godse, he being a Brahmin, he killed Mahatma Gandhi, and the anger of the nation was such that all the people in and around some part of India, mainly around Maharashtra and Karnataka, which is the southern western belt of Karnataka, all the people were very angry against that community, Brahmins, from which Nathuram Godse belonged, and they were very angry. And at that time, the other castes actually burnt the fields, burnt the houses, and even killed many, many Brahmins. Now, we, our family, being Brahmins, we were our house, our ancestors' house in our village, which is in the northwestern part of Karnataka. It was burnt, although the fields were burnt, all the crops were burnt, but they still held the, you know, field in our names, and that remained. So our family, back then, it had to abscond and get the refuge in different places around the villages from different friends who were, who were known to our family. Although they were also very angry against the Brahmins, because one radical Brahmin, had killed Mahatma Gandhiji. Yes, it did affect the families, you know. My grandmother, whenever she used to tell, she was alive up to 1990, until I was like 11 years old. So she used to tell, when I was a kid, she used to tell the stories of this. After that, even my father used to, you know, tell the stories, whatever he had heard from his mother, his father, and so on, his family basically. So whenever my grandmother used to tell this story, she used to, you know, the tears used to roll from her eyes all the time.
The interviewees involved in this project all have unique and interesting stories to tell. Sanskriti student and one of the dance artists for this project, Linnea, interviewed her father about his cultural background. He was born in Mumbai, India. His family then moved to Los Angeles before settling in Adelaide, Australia. In this clip, he talks about different aspects of his identity, such as religion and language.
And then we're in LA. Okay, fine. So that was utterly and totally disorienting, so for a few reasons. Firstly, I had whilst I was English fluent, I'd never been educated, or maybe I had been educated in English, but I hadn't functioned in English in the world at large, and so everything was in English. School was utterly and totally disorienting. I have no memory of the school at all. I have very little memory of that school, which suggests strongly that, you know, it had left no impression on me. And by that stage, I'd stopped speaking Tamil pretty much. I'd lost all of that in California, so it was stopped.
How did this religion, or how you practiced religion, change as you grew up and moved around?
Right. So I have no memory of practicing religion in Bombay. Practice of religion, there was none. There was certainly mythology. So my mum used to get these, my parents used to buy Amachitrakatha, the cartoons, and we used to read those avidly, and I used to read prose translations of Mahabharata and Ramayana, which is fine. But we didn't practice religion, and that's the weird part. We didn't go to pujas, we didn't celebrate Hindu religious festivals. So, you know, Navaratri, Shivaratri, none of these things actually, you know, Ganesha Tirthi, none of this actually, don't know when they are, don't really know what's done for them. I couldn't tell you when Holi is, really. I mean, there's a bunch of things we just didn't do. That whole calendar just went out the window.
In their oral history interviews, lots of the students talked with close family about topics they knew a bit about but had never really spoken about in detail. Dia interviewed her father about his childhood growing up in Bangladesh. Here, he talks about his experience as a child during the Liberation War in 1971.
I remember the one thing. When I was around 4.5 years old, during our Liberation War, 1971. When I was in 4.5 years, I have seen too many killing, raping by Pakistani soldier. They destroyed too many mosques, too many temples. Their main target was in Hindu population and their temple. When the Pakistani army come to our village, we used to hide in a forest, sometime in a friend's house, that is, they are Muslim, because they are not main target. Their main target was in Hindu, that's why Hindu people always get shelter in Muslim people. So. Then at some point we went to India. So after a couple of months, we heard the Pakistani soldier surrendered to Mukti Vahini, it's called, on 16 December. Then we came back home, and this is interestingly, we have seen our land, our wealth, our home, is unchanged, and the Muslim people, they saved everything. So that's why in Bangladesh, in the Muslim and Hindu relationship, is really, really very good, and we are proud of these things. So, yeah, so Bangladesh is a independent country now, and Bangladesh was born on 16 December 1971.
During the project, students spoke to family and friends to find out more about how Asian culture in Britain has changed over time. Sia's here to introduce her interviewee now.
Hello, my name is Sia Nair, and for Academy's Heritage Project, I interviewed Geeta Mistry, who is my Beaver Scouts leader. I call her Red Beaver. She was born in a town called Navsari in Gujarat, India, but moved to Coventry, UK, as a child when she was 3 years old. In this clip, she talks about her experiences growing up in the UK as a migrant from India. She has very fond memories of growing up in the UK.
Well, as I say, that all my friends at the time were English anyway. I had very few. When my friend Emiyati came, I think there was a couple then, but that was a few years later. And, I never thought of myself as Indian. That's one thing I must say to you, that having grown up then, I didn't regard myself as Indian because I wasn't with Indian people. So I never even thought about my colour, you know? And it's strange, I think, people hearing that you don't think about your colour. Whereas slowly, as more and more Asians came over and over the years, it became more apparent. And then you got the political things going on and everything, and that's when you started to realize that you aren't Well, for me, it was different. I never, ever thought, well, I knew I was Indian. And there's one interesting thing that I thought, that when I was, how old would I have been? About 10? Oh, just before that. My aunt, my mum's sister, came from India to get married. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think about the weddings we have now, you know, well, back then, all we had was they went to the registry office, and then they came back to our house, and the garland, the har, they just exchanged the har. There's no priest, no nothing. That's in the early 60s. There was nobody, no Indian weddings whatsoever. So when I thought when I grow up, there won't be anything. It will just be like this, you know. But it's changed because 60s, early 60s, middle 60s and whatever, more and more Indian people came from Nairobi, I mean Kenya, Uganda, wherever they came from, they brought all the culture with them. Then that's how we started getting more and more Indian shops. You could buy things, and you could just get everything. And so actually when I did get married, mine was sort of an arranged marriage, not totally arranged, but I had the whole civil wedding and the Indian wedding, and that was in, 1975? So within, 10, 15, whatever years, it had all changed.
Music, dance and performance are embedded in South Asian culture, in both Asia and here in the UK. For this project, Adia made use of technology and interviewed her grandfather who lives in India. He was previously a Yakshagana performer, although Adia, who attends weekly classes at Sanskriti, found it particularly interesting that he's never actually attended a dance class.
Do you still perform Yakshagana now?
I have been performing. The last performance was sometime in July 2018.
But then did you
because
sort of retire?
It requires a lot of energy. I am aged now, I cannot have that much of energy for dancing Yakshagana. Mm. I have it in my blood, but maybe I have constraints to perform now. But I truly enjoy, even if somebody else is performing, I often visit and see those Yakshagana programs. I enjoy.
Okay. So, did any of your brothers do Yakshagana?
Yeah, my brothers also were performing. True, yes.
Did they go to classes or did they learn
from me? No, none of them.
So, how did
they learn? Just like me, they also learned from my father initially. And just by looking at others, we learned.
And do you still play the mrudangam now?
Yes, I play mrudangam just like a hobby. I had learned the art of playing mrudangam when I was a student in the college. And I continue to practice a little just for my satisfaction, not for performing elsewhere on a forum.
Music also played a big part in Anna's interview, as she interviewed her violin teacher, Simon. Anna was interested to find out how his involvement with music and playing the violin had impacted his life and what he enjoyed about it. Throughout the project, the students learned that oral history isn't just about finding out the events that happened in someone's life, but it's also about a person's memories and how they felt at the time.
What is your profession and what do you like most about it?
I'm a violin teacher and was freelance musician until all of this COVID. So what I enjoy about it most, I think it's the continuous learning and deepening knowledge around music and how we learn, and, you know, for concerts and seeing where pupils go through life with their music. Recently on Facebook, someone I was at school with contacted me and said, "Oh my God, are you still playing the violin?" You know, because it's a long time since I was at school. And I would say that the violin has been a constant source of learning and a constant source of development, and that development never really stops.
Anjali's interviewee, Joan, came to the UK from Ireland when she was 15. She first moved to London and then moved to Cambridge, where she still lives, when she was 21.
Hello, my name is Anjali Sriju. As part of my oral history project, today on 5th of December 2020, I'm going to interview my neighbour, Joanne, who is a retired nurse. In this interview, Jo will be sharing her childhood memories and her experiences when she moved from Ireland to Cambridge. How did you feel when you came to Cambridge? Like, are you scared or like shy?
Well, I wasn't shy because I had Paul by then, so I was had responsibilities. I was a mum, so I had to act grown up, didn't I? But I wasn't scared to come to Cambridge, but I didn't like Cambridge very much at the beginning because my parents lived in London, and we missed them so much because it was strange here and we didn't know anyone. So we were going back every weekend because it was only 1 hour's drive away. So every weekend for about a year, we went back to North London.
Nivedita interviewed her friend's sister, who was born in the UK, moved to Greece, and then returned to the UK when she was around 6 or 7. In this clip, she talks about school and how life is different to the UK compared to her life in Greece.
I did go to one briefly while I was in Greece for 2 years.
Did you like the experience studying in Greece to how it is here? Or do you think they're both the same?
Here in the UK, there's more, I would say, fun, like, creative subjects. In Greece, we would do, like, a lot of maths every day, even when I was, like, a young year. But now there's, for example, there's dance, there's computer science, there's art. None of those would be in Greece. In Greece, there would be more of the STEM subjects.
When did you first come into England?
I was born here, so I guess that counts. But then I came in afterwards at around the age of 7 or 6, 6 or 7. And that was, I don't remember a lot of it, but I do remember I was sad for leaving my family behind.
How is your life different from here to in Greece?
Here, I have most of my closest friends are in, even though most of my older friends are in Greece here, so I've made some of the closest ones. So I think even though I have family over there in Greece, I think here I would rather be in the UK than any other country.
It's been really great to hear the fascinating and unique stories from all of the interviewees involved in this heritage project. We hope that these oral histories inspired the students to learn more about their culture, family and community history, as well as sharing these stories with you in this podcast. Our workshops were held online via Zoom during the COVID-19 pandemic. Some of the interviews were also conducted online in accordance with COVID-19 guidelines. Thank you for listening to this episode of Academy's Oral History Podcast. To find out more about the project and Academy's work creating, commissioning and nurturing South Asian dance in the UK, please visit www.academy.co.uk. Once again, thank you to our funders, the National Lottery Heritage Fund, and to Sanskriti staff Krishna and Linnea for all of your hard work and support throughout this project. Thank you also to the students from Sanskriti who joined me on Zoom on Sunday mornings for our workshops.